From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Here's what's happening. The Food and Drug Administration has just approved the new swine flu vaccine, a long-anticipated step as the government works to start mass vaccinations next month. Limited supply should start trickling out the first week of October, about a week earlier than expected. Then about 45 million doses should arrive around October 15th, followed by more shipments each week. They'll be available at up to 90,000 sites around the country, including schools and clinics across the U.S. State health departments have chosen these areas as the best at getting the shots out fast. The government has ordered 195 million doses, but may order more if there's enough demand. Typically, fewer than 100 million Americans seek flu vaccines every year. The public's assessment of the accuracy of news stories is now at its lowest level in more than two decades, according to the Pew Research surveys. Just 29% of Americans say that news organizations generally get the facts right, while 63% say that news stories are often inaccurate. Now, in the initial survey in this series about the news media's performance, which was started in 1985, 55% said news stories were accurate, while 34% said they were inaccurate. Now they've just done a complete turnabout. That percentage had fallen sharply by the late 1990s and has remained low over the last decade. U.S. retail sales rose in August at the fastest pace in 3.5 years, and a gauge of the New York State manufacturing hit a two-year high, offering some hope for a solid recovery from a severe recession. Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke also gave a fairly upbeat view of the U.S. economy, saying the longest and deepest recession since the 1930s was likely over. Is that true, Mish Shedlock? Is it likely over?
It's probably over, depending upon how one measures it. When you throw enough money at the problem with cash for clunkers and rebates up to $8,000 for housing, you're going to stimulate a little bit of what pent-up demand was there. The question is how sustainable that is. And today we see that Bank of America, Citigroup credit card defaults soar to new highs. And as long as unemployment's continuing to rise, which I expect it to for probably another year, I think we're going to approach 10.5% or 11% next year. We can expect to see those credit card defaults happen. And as upbeat as Bernanke was, you know, I often wonder if he really is just saying things, George, or if he believes what he's saying. Does he really believe it? I don't know. He doesn't sound genuine. Now, on the other hand, Janet Yellen, she's the Fed chair from San Francisco. Mm-hmm. She was out today. She was calling for a U-shaped recession and another jobless recovery. She goes, I expect the recovery to be tepid. Even if the economy grows, things won't feel good. My own forecast is for a less robust recovery. It's not going to be a V. A large body of evidence supports this guarded outlook. Households remain stressed. You know, these are kinds of things that are actually believable, not what Bernanke's saying. But the key to this picture, I think, she goes, my business contacts indicate they will be reluctant to hire again unless they see clear evidence of a sustained recovery. This suggests we're going to see another so-called jobless recovery in which employment growth lags. Now, if employment growth lags, which I believe it will, and it's even going to rise throughout this so-called recovery up to 10.5% or 11%, and then we have a jobless recovery. It's one thing, George, to have a jobless recovery at 5%. I think it's another thing, indeed, to have a jobless recovery at 10 or 11%.
Absolutely, and a key barometer, Mish, of course, will be the retail season, this holiday season. We'll have to see what happens. If you want to just read up on Mish's blog, all you have to do is Google him, M-I-S-H. A bizarre story. James S. McDonald, president and chief executive of investment management firm Rockefeller & Company, has died of an apparently self-inflicted gunshot wound. The 56-year-old McDonald was found in his car about 50 miles south of Boston. There was no note, but McDonald made a phone call to his wife earlier in the day. The death is still under investigation, but Barclay McFadden III, a longtime friend, said McDonald took his own life. I don't know how he knows that. McDonald had been president and chief executive of the New York investment manager since 2001 of the company that was started in 1882 by John D. Rockefeller to manage the family's assets. Strange story. A team of scientists based at the Royal Institute of Technology in Sweden have apparently made a revolutionary discovery about how hydrocarbon is formed, learning that animal and plant fossils are not necessary to form crude oil. This discovery, the scientists say, means that the world will never run out of crude oil. Currently, theory states that crude oil is formed very slowly over millions of years from the remains of dead plants and animals. Buried under rock over time, the pressure and temperature of natural earth processes results then in the creation of crude oil. But the theory apparently is getting to be old news, as some of these scientists say. They have proven that fossilized plants and animals are not needed to create hydrocarbons. Jerry Corsi, author of Black Gold Stranglehold, what do you think of this one, Jerry?
Well, George, it's a very interesting article. It was published in Nature Geoscience, which has a team of professional scientists that judge the articles submitted. The paper demonstrates that a laser heating experiment, an apparatus that the scientists created, was able to synthesize advanced hydrocarbons. And the scientists were very direct in their results, their conclusion, and I'm reading from their paper, the results support the suggestion that hydrocarbons, heavier than methane, can be produced by abiotic processes in the upper mantle. And so the scientists here, and they include really top institutes, the Geophysical Laboratory at Carnegie Institute in Washington, the Monsanov Moscow State Academy of Fine Chemical Technology, and the Royal Institute of Technology in Stockholm. They were able to produce ethane, propane, and butane from synthetic chemicals in this laboratory apparatus that resembles temperature and pressure conditions in the mantle of the Earth, the upper mantle of the Earth.
Something we've been saying for years now, Jerry, that there is no peak oil crisis.
That's right, George. The implications of this are tremendous because they also validate the findings of this deep water oil. Just look very quickly in the past month, we've been able to see this Tiber well, which was found by BP in the Gulf of Mexico.
Yes.
A depth of 35,000 feet, that's the height of Mount Everest. We also see Brazil. Brazil's found now a second giant field in the Atlantic, deep in the Atlantic, next to the Tupi field. And even President Hugo Chavez in Venezuela is bragging that Venezuela is going to find a massive 1.4 billion barrel of oil field off of Venezuela. In the deep waters, similar to what Brazil has found.
Well, one of your theories in your book, Black Gold Stranglehold, indeed was that there is abiotic oil, and that is this planet forms it all by itself. Jerry, we're going to tap into you a little bit later on in the next week or so about some of the national events that are occurring as well. That's Jerome Corsi. He writes also for WorldNet Daily. President Barack Obama's top military advisor endorsed an increase in U.S. forces for the war in Afghanistan, setting up a split with leading Democrats in Congress and complicating an already tough decision for the president himself. Admiral Mike Mullen, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, said the war is growing more complicated and the enemy gaining in sophistication. Winning will require more resources from outside Afghanistan, including more troops. So we're going the other way. Children who are spanked as one-year-olds are more likely to behave aggressively and perform worse on cognitive tests as toddlers than children who are spared the punishment, according to new research. Though the negative effects of spanking were modest, the study shows that a growing body of literature finds that spanking isn't good for children. A 107-year-old Malaysian woman says she is ready to marry for the 23rd time because she fears her current drug addict husband might leave her for a younger woman. Wuk Kondor made headlines 4 years ago when she married a man 70 years her junior. But Wuk is now looking for new love as she fears that Mohammed, he's 37, who is undergoing voluntary drug rehabilitation treatment in the capital city of Kuala Lumpur, will leave her once the program ends. She's 107. Any takers? You know, we've all heard stories of people who've experienced seemingly miraculous recoveries from illness, haven't we? But can the same thing happen for our world? According to pioneering biologist Dr. Bruce Lipton, it's not only possible, it's already occurring. In his latest work, Spontaneous Evolution, the world-renowned expert in the emerging science of epigenetics reveals how our changing understanding of biology will help us navigate this turbulent period in our planet's history and how each of us can participate in this global shift. Up next, our special guest, Dr. Bruce Lipton, on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, our regular guest, Dr. Bruce Lipton, joining us next hour. His co-author will join us, Steve Byerman. Bruce Lipton, of course, PhD, internationally recognized authority in bridging science and spirit, and a leading voice in biology. A cell biologist by training, he taught at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine, later performed pioneering studies at Stanford University. Author of The Biology of Belief, he has been a guest speaker all over the country and the world. He's a keynote presenter for national and international conferences. Here's Bruce Lipton. Bruce, welcome back.
Thanks, George. This is just a great, exciting night for us because a special astrological significance for today. And it surprised me because it's a day where Saturn and Uranus are in opposition to each other. And the significance about that is where the existing structure, Saturn, is opposed by Uranus, which causes upheaval. And so we're beginning a period of upheaval right now. And while a lot of people are, of course, scared to death about what's going on, you can hear the joy in my heart and excitement because we're moving into something that's so fantastic in our evolution. And this is a transition. This is a birthing process. So my excitement.
Tell me about epigenetics. What is that?
Well, everybody has been taught the conventional understanding that DNA and genes control biology, and we talk about all our traits, and anytime anybody's looking for, well, what's the cause of something, we go to our genes, and that was based on an understanding called genetic control, which literally means control by genes. The new science, which has supplanted that, it's a much more encompassing science, is called epigenetic control. Epi means above, like when you say epidermis, that means the layer above the dermis, the skin. So epi is above. So when you say epigenetic control, what you're saying is control above the genes. And for the first time in our history of understanding, we are now recognizing that what we've been telling people for years and years and years, that genes control things, like genes turn on and genes turn off, is totally false. That's not how it works. And the new understanding really imparts an active participatory role of ourselves in the regulation of our own genes. So we're going from a period where we used to talk about, well, you're a victim of your heredity. You got cancer running your family, Alzheimer's, whatever, and you're a victim. And genes, you can't change them, and you didn't select them. And so basically, you become a victim of your heredity. And then as soon as you know you're a victim, of course, then you need to go seek help to compensate for those bad genes. And that was the old belief system. And the new belief system says that the way we perceive the world we live in, how we respond to the environment, changes our genetic code on a daily basis, that we adjust our genes based on our perceptions. In fact, a mind-boggling number, every gene in your body can be modified to create 30,000 different variations.
30,000?
From each gene.
It's huge.
Yeah, in other words, genes are potentials like film, And our mind is creates an image on that film. And that's as simple and as truthful as it really gets. It gets down to the fact that our perceptions and our beliefs and attitudes shape our genetics, and these change when we change the way we live from day to day. Just recently, Dean Ornish, famed for his cardiovascular stuff, did a study with prostate cancer people, and what he did is like he did with his other patients. No drugs. He just said, let's change lifestyle, you know, eat better, handle stress better, meditate, things like that. And he followed them for a short period of time, and by changing lifestyle, they changed the activity of 500 genes.
That is amazing.
So the big thing is, here's a whole history of you're a victim. And it turns out, it's like, oh, my God, we were in control and we didn't know it. And because it's our perceptions that control it, it's as Henry Ford said, whether you believe you can or whether you believe you can't, you're right. And so basically it says, we become masters when we understand this mechanism, because then we are free to change the way we respond to life. And when we change that, we change the genetic readout.
When you wrote The Biology of Belief and subsequently here Spontaneous Evolution with Steve Bayerman,
yes,
tell me of the significance of what happened to you or what you saw to begin to push you in that direction.
From the biology of belief
to where we are today. Yeah.
Well, it's so interesting because the biology of belief gets down to a very simple fact that talks about that our biology and our behavior is controlled by the way we perceive the world and how our conscious and our subconscious mind operate in that unfolding. But basically it says how your beliefs affect your local life. So it affects your relationships and affects how you do on the job. It affects your health. Okay, that's fine. What I started to realize at some point was, well, wait a minute, if enough people are sharing the same beliefs, then there's a coherence. And I realized, oh my goodness, a cultural belief, when infused into a population where everybody is creating their own reality, but when you get a large number of people to share the same creation, then it manifests. And all of a sudden, I said, "Oh my God, we are creating the world, but we didn't realize we're involved with that." And this is part of quantum physics. This is part of the mechanics of quantum physics and the new epigenetics and all that. And it basically says we have been participating in it, but we haven't realized that we have been programmed, and we've been programmed with being disempowered. And for me, it's the most amazing thing, because when I started to realize, and I give lectures, and I talk to people, I say, look, here's a picture of a woman walking across 200 feet of coals and flames around her. And then here's a picture, you know, a story of people, women picking up cars because a child is caught underneath it, and they're picking up 1,500 pounds or more.
Yeah.
And I talk about down south in the U.S., we have Baptist fundamentalists work themselves up into a religious ecstasy, and to testify that God protects them, they play with copperheads and rattlesnakes, poisonous vipers, they get bitten, nothing happens. But the ones I really wanted to emphasize were some of them drink strychnine in toxic doses, as testament that God will protect them, and they drink this strychnine, and nothing happens to them. And all of a sudden, you go, wait a minute.
That's a little too far for me.
Well, I'm not ready to do it myself,
no.
Boy, but God bless them.
Yeah, I'm positive, and I believe in our ability to heal, but I'm not going to drink strychnine.
No, and it's, you know, and so why is this exciting? Because when the belief question is out, or, you know, or when a belief is so firm and positive, then we manifest things out of our beliefs. And we have to recognize that we have been cultivated with beliefs in our culture that shape our civilization. The beliefs that we buy give character to the civilization. So imagine this. I mean, we bought, and we'll talk about it later a bit more, but we bought a belief in Darwinian theory. And you say, so what does that mean to our culture? And it means, like, well, two things. One, it says, how did we get here? And according to theory, random mutations, genetic accidents. And so you say, well, then what's our purpose for being on the planet? And you say, well, there really isn't any purpose at all, because it was just an accident. That's the only reason we're here. And so you go, okay, we have no purpose in being here. And then you say, well, how do we do the best to live on the planet? And then you go to the other part of the theory that says that we're in an eternal struggle for survival with a competition for being the fittest. And all of a sudden you realize, my God, we're living in a belief that this is a dog-eat-dog world, and we all have to compete against each other to get our piece of life out of this. And this is our belief because this is what science said. And no.
It's remarkable work. We're going to be back with you in just a moment. Dr. Bruce Lipton, our special guest tonight, author of the book Spontaneous Evolution that he co-wrote with Steve Behrman. We'll be back with Dr. Bruce Lipton in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Bruce Lipton, our guest tonight. Bruce, let's talk about spontaneous evolution now. And by the way, you sent us an incredible crop formation, which I've got to ask you. Did you guys make that?
You would think we did, because I was...
It is identical to your book cover.
It came out at the same time the book was coming off the press. It was like in the field. Something was going on. It's like it was just an amazing sight to see a crop circle and the book cover share the same image.
It's weird. And we've got that over at coasttocoastam.com. It is truly bizarre. And I think what makes it even stranger, you've got on your cover these twinkly kind of lights they look like, right? All around the body, Da Vinci's
Absolutely.
Body.
Fractals.
Yeah, and they're in the crop formations. I mean, it's very strange.
It was close, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I get so excited by this because Steve Behrman and I have this book that is based on science, and it basically says that that we're coming to the end of civilization as we know it. It's not just because all these crises that are looming and you say, well, it looks like that. It's like, no, we are coming to an end because of a necessity, and we're actually on the bridge to a new form of civilization right at this current moment. So the unfortunate part is the media wants to keep us so entrapped in all the fear stuff that we're really not getting a vision of where's this all going, because that's the part that's real exciting, and it's an evolutionary jump for humanity. And as you mentioned, sometimes we know people who are deadly sick, and everyone calls them, you know, like they're finished, terminal, and they're done.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden they just spring to life, and they have what's called a spontaneous remission. And while everyone right now might be looking at the planet and saying, oh, my goodness, the environment, the air, the water, the fuel problems and all this, it's coming to an end. And we look at the Earth as, well, this life is becoming terminal here. It basically can undergo the exact same spontaneous remission because the biosphere is a living organism and operates the same as the human body. And the main thing that promotes the spontaneous remission in the patient and what we need for the spontaneous remission of our planet is a fundamental change in belief. And that's really what is the big step that we're working on right now. And so what Steve and I have written in this book is about a simple fact. It's so simple. It goes like this, that the civilizations have come and gone in Western civilization. We can go back and say we're like the animism, which is like the Native Americans, that which everything was material and spiritual, and they mixed the two worlds. And then we went to polytheism, where spirit got separated from physical things and turned into separate gods. And then we went into monotheism, where we had a single god. And then at some point that fell into the current thing called scientific materialism. Civilizations' characters change. And the reason is this. Because what happens when a civilization grows, it's sort of like a child. It starts, a new civilization is like a child, which is in development and trying all kinds of things out. And then once it says, so this is the way life is, it becomes very rigid, like a parent, and says, that's just the way it is. And the problem is, in a universe that is never staying the same, a universe that is dynamically, continuously changing, nothing can be rigid because it doesn't bend with the evolution. So rigid civilizations, when they hit a wall, create challenges. And then new beliefs and new thoughts come in, and the old civilization goes, and a new one makes its way in. And what we're finding right now is the fundamental beliefs of this civilization about how we act and live on this planet, which were based in science from 100 years ago mainly, those beliefs are found to be wrong. And it changes how we're going to learn to have to survive on this planet. We have to change the way we're living. So then you say, well, how does that happen? And the answer is the old structure falls apart, and a new structure will come into to take its place.
Is that a good thing?
Well, it has to be, because let's look at it this way. If we continue doing what we're doing and the way we're doing it, then here's the simple fact that science has established. we're already into the sixth mass extinction of life on this planet. Five times in our history, in the evolution of the planet, life was essentially wiped out and then started all over again. And what we're finding right now is we are deep into the sixth mass extinction. And the difference is this: the first five were things like asteroids, comets hitting the Earth and turning the environment upside down. But the current one is unique because science has attributed to human behavior. So we are creating our own extinction by the way we're living on this planet. And the issues are is that, Einstein said it basically said you can't solve the problems with the same thinking that created the problems. And the institutions that we have, which include healthcare and government and economics and all that, are the things that have been hurtling us toward extinction. And it says very simply, well, you don't want to change those. You know where you're going. And why this all coming down is because it's not sustainable. And to make it sustainable, we have to change the way we deal with each other. And the simple evolution, the conclusion, what is this all about? It's not the evolution of the individual human that we're talking about. That happened a million years ago. The evolution we're talking about is the evolution of what is called a superorganism. And that is, each human is the equivalent of a cell in the body of a superorganism called humanity. And as much as
hasn't developed yet.
No, we're right on the edge of making it happen or not. It's very interesting. We are indeed in a crisis, and there's no guarantee it's going to go one way or the other way right now unless we collectively get our beliefs changed. And that's what, you know, that's why your audience is so cool and why it gets bigger, because more people are thinking, more people are looking for other answers, because the current institutions are leading us to hell because of their interest in corporate profit and not sustainability of the planet. And so they have to fall.
You have hinted that right now people seem to be living in fear, chaos. No matter where you go, there's something happening, whether it's the economy or now they're talking about more troops in Afghanistan. I mean, it doesn't make sense. Nothing makes sense anymore, Bruce. How does that affect people and their outcome as you look at spontaneous evolution?
Oh, it is the most. We have a healthcare crisis, and it's very interesting.
We have an everything crisis.
Yeah, well, I want to do the healthcare crisis because you want to talk about how a belief is going to, where that all came from, and that's where it's come from. It's come into this issue, is that we now recognize that, for example, 90% of doctor visits are all due to issues of lifestyle. That we're starting to recognize that things like cardiovascular disease, 90% lifestyle. Diabetes type 2, lifestyle. All these are starting to turn out to lifestyle. So you would think, in an intelligent world, if we know that it's due to lifestyle, then we would put our money where our mouth is and start saying, look, we have to teach people the nature of science about how they're driving their own bodies into the ground with stress. And so you think we would do that. But no, we put our money into buying more drugs. And the issue is drugs are the problem in the first place. So, and it's an institution that already knows that that's not the solution, but it's an institution driven by so much profit that it's like, damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead.
You're going to take the swine flu vaccine?
Absolutely not. I'm sorry.
No way.
Absolutely not. it's just people are getting such misinformation. And the problem is, if you understand the biology of belief, how your thoughts change your genetics and your behavior, I mean, this is what we're beginning to find out. Like cancer, they're always looking for the cancer gene. And it turns out most cancers are just due to the epigenetics, which is connected to a person's beliefs.
And isn't it true everyone has a cancer cell or cells in their body right now? It just determines what your immune system is.
Absolutely, and there you got it, George. It was your immune system, and then we go back to our story about stress, and here's where it comes in. When you get stressed, three things happen to your body physiologically. Number one, look at your body as two areas, the gut, the viscera with all the organs in it, and then the other part are the arms and legs, okay?
All right.
The viscera is involved with growth, and the arms and legs are support and protection. So now basically it says this, when you want to energize the system, you have to give it the blood. And so the blood is distributed through the body where it's needed. So when I'm in a state of relaxedness, you know, I'm happy and everything. Most of the blood is in my gut, and the function there is to maintain the body and purify the system and clean it up and do all the maintenance. That's what it does. But when I get stressed and I get afraid of, like, fight or flight, the stress hormones cause the blood vessels in the gut to constrict, and that pushes the blood to the arms and legs so you can get ready to fight or flight, whatever you got to do. And but what happened, stop for a second and realize, well, you shut off the blood to the viscera, which is growth, and you put it out there because you need all the blood for the protection.
Right.
So
right.
If you're under stress, you shut off your growth maintenance mechanisms. But here's the one that I was trying to get to is more important. Because there's two protection systems, the adrenal system, fight or flight, run from that tiger, and the other is called the immune system. Well, that's the internal one that takes care of anything that gets on the inside. Well, here, so let me give you a scenario. You could get the answer here. It's like, imagine you're controlling the energy flow in the body, where the blood's going to go, and you're up in the brain, and you got your office, and a phone rings up there, and it says, oh, my God, we're being chased by a saber-toothed tiger. And just as you get that phone call, another phone rings and says, oh, by the way, we have a bacterial infection in the gut, and we have a bad case of diarrhea. And then you're the energy person, and I'd have to say, well, how would you, you know, provide the energy? How would you split the energy? What would you do in this situation? The answer is, obviously, I put in the energy to running away from the tiger. I mean, basically, if the tiger catches you, the bacteria are the tiger's problem at that point. So basically, it says this. When we get into fight or flight, we take the blood out of the gut and put it into running, and we stop growing. And when we have fight or flight, and we also have an immune system, the immune system with internal issues is shut down by the stress hormones. The stress hormones actually shut down the immune system.
And if you're under stress constantly,
yes.
You're in trouble.
Absolutely, absolutely. There's George, that's the whole secret of 90% of our health crisis is to recognize we have been living in a 24/7 virtually 365 stress, continuous stress going into the system, which continuously inhibits our ability to grow and maintain our bodies so that we're always on the edge of bad health. And secondarily, it shuts down the immune system, which opens us up for anything, especially those cancer cells you talked about, which if you're in a healthy state, the immune system would take care of them all the time. But when you're in stress state, the inhibition of the immune system is what allows that cancer then to take off because it's not being watched at.
What causes the stress? Bruce, we're human beings. We're bombarded every day with every kind of problem. How do you fight it?
Well, this is the part is you is not to engage in it. You see, I think one of the biggest issues is like, okay, let's launch an counterattack to something, and then you realize, wait a minute, what are you doing with your energy? Even if you don't agree with them, you're still participating in dueling with them because the real way of doing it is step outside of it. It's really step outside of it, not to get engaged with it. And it sounds easy, and it actually is when you start to do it, is to disconnect because when they pull you in, they cause your hormones and your growth factors and your stress hormones to – they control it. And this is what this world's all about. Turn on the news, be afraid. And let me tell you the last one, George, because we talked about two things. We said stress shuts down growth,
right.
Which is problem, and then shuts down the immune system. And the third one is like – I call that adding insult to injury. The third one is when you're in a fight-or-flight situation, a quick question, do you think you use conscious reasoning and logic, or do you use reflex behavior?
Reflex behavior primarily.
So then what happens is the stress hormone, remember I told you the stress hormones cause the blood vessels in the gut to constrict and push the blood? Well, the same stress hormones cause the blood vessels in the forebrain, the thinking, conscious part, to constrict. So you can push the blood to the hindbrain and give a lot of energy to the reactive, reactionary, you know, fight or flight response.
That's the animal instinct in us, right?
Absolutely. And no thinking.
And no thinking.
And
you just do it.
Less intelligent.
It's almost like driving a car. Now we drive cars. We don't have to think. We know what we're doing, right?
Some of us. It depends on your driver education, doesn't it, George?
Some of us, yeah.
Yeah, so... So look at all the consequences. Add them all up, and you say, no wonder why we're going bankrupt. They're trying to fix stress with medicine. That doesn't fix it. It's actually changing your response to the stress.
Okay, here's a guy. He gets laid off from work. He's got a family. He's got a mortgage, and he hasn't gone into default yet. But now he's out of a job, so he may. That guy's going to have stress, Bruce. What do you do about that?
Well, this is the hardest thing in the world because this is what's unfolding right now, and we have to realize we must understand there's one way out. That's very critical because it is the key to the bigger problem, and the answer is community. We have to begin to be to return to the nature of a community. When I was young, you know, 60-some years ago, I remember communities where people knew each other and watch out for each other and take care of each
other. Not anymore.
Not anymore.
They didn't even lock doors then.
I know it. We used to keep the keys in the car.
Now they lock it, put a chair against the door.
And they're locked in their own little prison.
And a chain, yeah.
So what does that mean? Why does that happen? And the answer is because we bought into a belief that this world is based on continuous strife and a struggle to survive. And watch out, because somebody's going to come and get you in a dog-eat-dog world. We were programmed with that belief.
Boy, but that could happen. Crime's out of sight.
Oh, yeah, but then here's the problem. Beliefs create reality. So is the violence and all the stuff that we're facing now real, or is it because we have collectively creating this? And this is so important about this evolution. To spontaneously evolve, it's going to take a number, perhaps like the TM people found, maybe I think it's the square root of 1% of the population gets a coherent thought and life of living in harmony, and that will be like a tuning fork. And the other people, the other cells in our body of humanity, will start to resonate with that. And when that number is reached, we will change this movement from where we are into community, because when we live in community, that's where harmony and health is going to be
found.
See,
what I would love to see is somebody elected in office whose campaign is not change or this or that. It's, we're going to make your life easier. We're going to make it comfortable. You know, you've got to work and you've got to do what you have to do, but our role in government is to de-stress you. And that's what we're going to do. You know what? Show me one candidate, Bruce, who would say that. And that's a person who's going to get elected.
Well, I mean, the problem is if we were electing our own leaders, that might be something. But I have doubts about that myself. And I see that this is a movement. But the big issue is it really comes down to the money. And it comes down to the simple fact is this: we're living in an unsustainable system. And you know, it basically starts, let's say there was no money in circulation. And the first day the bank opens up, first bank, and you go in the bank and you say, yeah, I'd like $100. And they say, okay, we're going to loan you $100 and you're going to have to pay us back $110. And then all of a sudden, so let's just say you're the only customer. And then I say, okay, you've got $100. Where are you getting the other $10 from?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you realize, wait a minute, I can't pay back the other 10. It doesn't even exist.
I don't have it. That's right.
And this is the principle of the banking system of the world. We all borrow the money from something that doesn't exist and have to pay more back than that didn't exist either. So it's not real.
See, I think these leaders have read books like Spontaneous Evolution, all right? And they have done the opposite to try to get to us. Is that possible?
Yeah.
They see how we can win, how we can fight back. So they create all these other things to keep us going crazy.
I would have to agree with you, unfortunately, George, on that. It's just, you know what's interesting? Way back, the Jesuits would tell people, they were very proud, they would say, you know, give me the child and I will show you the man. Or what they also said was something like, you give me a child until it's 6 or 7, and it will belong to the church for the rest of its life. And you say, well, what's significant about that? And the answer was, they knew it already, that if you can get the first 6 years of programming into a child, you control that child for
absolutely
the rest of its
life.
Well,
I had a story tonight. They're saying now spanking's not good. It affects a child, and it happens.
Oh, absolutely, because this is where the child builds its relationship with the world. And the first thing is no trust of anything. And so nobody trusts anybody or anything in this world. It's a scary place because we fractured the family.
We're bringing in your co-author at the top of the hour, Steve Bearman.
Yeah, Steve
and
is wonderful.
Now,
I'm so happy.
Who is Swami Bayananda Andawanda?
Steve is a political science enthusiast and commentator. He's actually called himself an uncommon political commentator. And basically, Steve's work has been in the New Age circuits of comedy And he plays the Swami and makes satirical fun of the
government. Right. We're going to have some fun with that when we come back. Steve Barron joins us, the co-author with Dr. Bruce Lipton into Spontaneous Evolution, also known as Swami Biyanananda.